From New York and Durban, South Africa, this is Democracy Now in Exile.
All over the world! Stop U.S. racism! All over the world! Reparations now! Reparations now!
Well, the majority of people of color in America have decided they want reparation. They consider slavery and colonialism as crime against humanity,
right.
But the government of the United States have abandoned their people once again.
The U.S. withdraws, sort of, from the U.N. World Conference Against Racism in protest of criticism over Israel's treatment of Palestinians. We go live to Durban, South Africa, with reactions from Jesse Jackson, Nobel Peace Prize winner Rigoberta Menchú, and human rights groups from around the world. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now in Exile. I'm Amy Goodman. Over the past several years, the United States has embarked on a program of secret research on biological weapons that some officials say tests the global treaty banning such weapons. This according to a piece in the New York Times today. The 1972 treaty forbids nations from developing or acquiring weapons that spread disease, but it allows work on vaccines and other protective measures. Government officials said the secret research mimicked the major steps a state or terrorist would take to create a biological arsenal. The projects, which have not been previously disclosed, were begun under President Clinton and have been embraced by the Bush administration, which intends to expand them. The New York Times goes on to say, earlier this year, administration officials said the Pentagon drew up plans to engineer genetically a potentially more potent variant of the bacterium that causes anthrax, a deadly disease ideal for German warfare. A Bush administration official said the National Security Council is expected to give the final go-ahead later this month. Administration officials said the need to keep such projects secret was a significant reason behind President Bush's recent rejection of a draft agreement to strengthen the Germ Weapons Treaty, which has been signed by 143 nations. The draft would require those countries to disclose where they're conducting defensive research involving gene splicing or germs likely to be used in weapons. The sites would then be subject to international inspections. Among the facilities likely to be open to inspection under the draft agreement would be the West Jefferson, Ohio Laboratory of Battelle Memorial Institute, a military contractor that has been selected to create the genetically altered anthrax. And this piece from Robert Fisk in the British newspaper The Independent. He writes, just as the BBC last month ordered its reporters to use the phrase targeted killings for Israel's assassination of Palestinians, CNN has instructed its journalists to stop referring to Gilo as a Jewish settlement. Instead, they must call the settlement built illegally on occupied Arab land outside Jerusalem a Jewish neighborhood. The instruction from CNN's headquarters in Atlanta is straightforward. Quote, we refer to Gilo as a Jewish neighborhood on the outskirts of Jerusalem built on land occupied by Israel in 1967, the order states. We don't refer to it as a settlement. In the past, CNN used terrorists only about Arabs. The Israeli settler who murdered 29 Palestinians in a Hebron mosque in 1994 was always called an extremist on CNN, and at one point described Arab protests at the illegal settlements built by Jews on Palestinian land as conflicting heritage claims. A CNN spokesperson in Atlanta said last night, quote, we have no response to make to you. We don't want to get into a discussion on this. In fact, we'd rather not say anything about this at all. This news from Bogota. A new Colombian government report has raised fresh doubts about Washington's drug-fighting strategy in Colombia, saying aerial fumigation of crops may be damaging the environment and is failing to curb drug production. The report from Colombia's Controller General's office urged the president of Colombia to suspend the spraying of drug crops until scientists can study the environmental effects of the herbicide. The report also said the eradication campaign has failed to curb the drug industry in Colombia, the world's main producer of cocaine, and the main exporter of heroin to the United States. The report also urged the government to devise strategies other than forced eradication to curb drug production and said promised social aid for coca farmers struggling to switch to legal crops has been insufficient and slow to arrive, a point acknowledged by a high-level delegation of the Bush administration that visited Colombia last week. The Bush administration is outraging even the Girl Scouts by its conservative positions in the run-up to a major world summit on children to be held later this month. The conference, organized by the UN Children's Fund, is scheduled for September 19th, a follow-up to a landmark summit in 1990, which aimed at setting guidelines for governments, special interest groups, and UN agencies. Since then, issues of protection of children have moved to the forefront, children used as soldiers, as prostitutes, and as victims of HIV and poverty. Some 75 presidents and prime ministers, mostly from Africa and Asia and Latin America, will attend the conference. In an unusual alliance at the conference, the United States finds itself siding on several issues with conservative Muslim nations, Sudan, Libya, Iran, Pakistan, and Egypt, to the dismay of the European Union. Since the start of the negotiations in February, the U.S. delegation has sought to delete references to the 1989 Convention of the Rights of the Child, the backbone of UNICEF's work for a decade. The treaty, signed by President Clinton in 1995, has been ratified by all countries except the U.S. and Somalia, which did not have a government. Conservatives in Congress argue the treaty encroaches on parental rights and object to provisions against capital punishment or life imprisonment without parole for children. The U.S. delegation also opposes special mention of abuse and rehabilitation of girls in war zones, saying this would discriminate against boys and apparently fearing counseling on birth control and reproductive rights. We go now live to South Africa, but first some music from Oludum, uniting the blending of races.
Minha cultura é riqueza sem fim, infinito poder cultural. Traço meu caminho desvendando mistérios do mundo atual. Passo a passo eu estou em ascensão, progredindo sempre, sempre eu vou. Unindo a miscigenação, igualdade existente é a voz do pelô.
Unindo a miscigenação, igualdade existente é a voz do pelô.
Sou a Prolodum.
Sou a Prolodum.
E aí?
Sou a Prolodum do pelô. Sou a Prolodum.
Maciel Pelourinho foi quem me criou. Sou a Prolodum.
Eu sou Olodum, canto lindo e distinto de cor. A raiz que firma meus passos, Pelourinho, Maciel, Salvador. Vou vivendo com perseverança, na esperança de mundo melhor.
Welcome to Democracy Now! Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go live to Durban, South Africa, the U.S. today is insisting it's not withdrawing from the U.N. World Conference Against Racism. In a call to U.N. Human Rights Commissioner Mary Robinson from the airport, the head of the U.S. delegation said that the U.S. would keep a single official in Durban who would retain delegate status. The conversation came after the U.S. delegation sent a statement announcing its withdrawal to the U.S. non-governmental delegation last night. Israel quickly followed the move. Both countries withdrew in protest at language in conference drafts that branded Israel as racist for its treatment of Palestinians in the occupied territories. We're joined in Durban studios right now by Tom Goldtooth, who's executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network, as well as Malika Dutt, who is executive director of Breakthrough, a U.S. and India-based organization, and a member of the U.S. NGO Coordinating Committee for the World Conference. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Tom Goldtooth, let's begin with you. You were meeting with the delegation just before it announced it had withdrawn last night. What were they saying?
Yeah, that's right. We had been in an effort to meet with them for about 2.5 days when we found out that they had sent a delegation here. And we finally established that meeting at 5:30. And at that meeting, they knew already, you know, some of the main issues that we wanted to talk to them about. But before we went into the discussion, they said they had something to tell us. And they said that that they had received some marching orders from Washington, D.C., that their delegation is being withdrawn, and that, you know, that really any other discussion around various issues was really a moot point at this point. So it really surprised us because we had not heard that they had, you know, decided that they were officially going to withdraw. And they also told us that, you know, they wouldn't be able to talk about that discussion was being reserved by a press conference within an hour.
And what were the reasons they gave you?
We asked them that question, and they just said no comment on that. That those questions would be addressed when the United States officials make their announcement in their press conference. And to our understanding, that was supposed to be done back in Washington, D.C.
Malika Dutt, did you get more information as a member of the U.S. NGO Coordinating Committee for the World Conference?
Amy, last evening we had organized a briefing by the U.S. delegation of U.S. NGOs for 6 p.m., and there were more than 200 U.S. people waiting for the delegation at UNISA, which is the university building nearby to the official conference center. The delegation arrived and spoke to several of us who were representatives of the U.S. NGO Coordinating Committee and insisted that they would only walk into the room to do a briefing if all the media that was in the room left. They said that they had decided to withdraw, that was the only statement that they could make, that they could not take any questions, but that they would not make the statement in front of the NGOs with media present. By that point, even prior to that arrival, the mood amongst the UN NGOs was very organized, very united. A lot of slogan chanting had already gone on with people talking about slavery as a crime against humanity, the demand for reparations, discussions about the whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So I think part of the U.S. delegation's hesitance to address the NGOs also came, I think, from a sense of discomfort and fear of having to deal with this very organized and militant crowd. What ended up happening was that they ended up leaving. They did not officially address the U.S. NGOs who were assembled. They spoke to some of us and said that exactly what they had said to the Indigenous Caucus prior to the meeting, that they could not take any questions until the official White House statement had been issued. At that point, the 200-strong, more than 200-strong group went into an organizing mode. We began a conversation about what we were going to do, how we were going to unite, and how we were going to take a stand against the U.S. abandoning this very important conference. That dialogue turned into a spontaneous march to the International Conference Center, where we were barred, as you had mentioned earlier. But what was really amazing and wonderful was the kind of energy and synergy that everyone demonstrated, where quickly all of our issues became all of our issues. You know, we were talking about reparations, about indigenous rights, about immigrant rights, about trafficking in women, the problems being faced by people of Asian descent. And it really became a reflection of the true diversity of our communities across the United States. This morning, the demonstrations continued at 9 o'clock in the morning, again outside the ICC. And if anything, it was even more colorful, more vibrant, more heterogeneous than the night before, where we were also joined by members of groups from all over the world who stood in solidarity with us to call accountability to the U.S. government. Tons of media were present, including, you know, CNN, ABC, all of these different folks. And I think what we are trying to say is that, yes, the U.S. government is not here. Yes, the U.S. government is not being accountable. But we, the U.S. community, in all of our diversity and strength, are here. And we are going to continue the demand for racial justice going forward.
Can I ask both of you what your reaction is to the reasons that were given ultimately, particularly here in the United States, the U.S. and Israel pulling out of the conference? The Washington Post puts it, charging the meeting had been hijacked by Arab nations and converted into a forum for extremist diatribes against Israel and Jews. The New York Times says, quotes Powell, "I have taken this decision with regret because of the importance of the international fight against racism and the contribution the conference could have made to it. But following discussions, our team in Durban and others who are working for a successful conference, I'm convinced that will not be possible." Saying the proposed documents assail the racist practices of Zionism and describe Israel's treatment of Palestinians as a new kind of apartheid. Tom Goldtooth, your response to that.
I had specifically asked the two delegates of the United States Department yesterday on what their reasons were and whether or not it was specifically related to the potential announcement of Israel to pull out their delegates. The delegates, made a strong point that they would not discuss that. There was a sense from our indigenous caucus that met with them that there was a correlation to, you know, a lot of the protests, that the passion, the concerns of genocide, ethnocide, of war crimes of the Palestinian peoples. And the desire for some kind of action to be taken from this body here that's convening, and I was as I was thinking about this whole thing is that there seemed to be a pattern of the United States government in these type of hard issues that they seem to be impatient, and I was surprised. In fact, I was very frustrated that our delegation from the United States did not want to continue on to address these issues of racial discrimination, and because these are not easy issues, otherwise we wouldn't be here, and I feel that they have a serious responsibility, not only to themselves but also to the people here. We traveled here, we raised monies. Some people, you know, had cakewalks just to get monies to be here, and only to see our delegation come late and leave early. And you know, we have a long history as American Indian and Alaska Native peoples with treaty making, government-to-government relationship, and dealings with representatives of the United States government. We have government-to-government responsibilities to each other that's been reserved through legal instruments as indigenous peoples in the United States. And this is just a continuation of the attitudes and the policies and practices that the United States has perpetuated against indigenous peoples. When issues get really tough and hard, they pull back. If they don't get their way, they pout, just like little children. Fortunately, you know, we have the public, the civil society, the NGOs of the United States that were here to witness this. It's something that, one of us, we made a remark that, you know, there's empty seats there now. Empty seats. Who is representing the United States in this very important conference? And some of us were saying, maybe we as American Indian Alaska Native, since we are the first Americans, since we are the First Nations and the Aboriginals of the United States, maybe we should go and sit in those seats, because who has more of a right to talk about these issues and are impacted as well in discrimination is us as Native people, to come over there and sit down in those seats and bring our brothers and sisters from African American and Mexican American, Asian American, who are also being disenfranchised from ineffective federal laws that fail to protect, you know, our people of color back home and our Native peoples.
Tom Goldtooth, you had been trying the Indigenous Environmental Network, trying to arrange a meeting for days with the U.S. delegation. What did you want to raise?
That's right. You know, one of the there's many issues, but you know, in order to cut to some of the very serious issues that we've been addressing here, is in this draft declaration that all the countries are considering. There's a couple articles that are written in the draft that's been just a slap in the face against indigenous peoples worldwide concerning self-determination and the rights of indigenous peoples. There's a caveat paragraph that is paragraph 27 of this official World Conference State Declaration. And it's a manifestation of racism against indigenous peoples and constitutes a racist attack by the United Nations on the rights of indigenous peoples. We are demanding that paragraph be deleted in its entirety. Furthermore, any qualifications on the right of indigenous peoples to self-determination is racist and is contrary to the fundamental principles of international law. Basically, that term, it brings out the term indigenous peoples with the S word, and the United Nations and the states. And I need to say that this whole effort in the PrepCom 3 in Geneva at the end of July and 1st of August was led by the United States government. And what it did, it made reference to the term of indigenous people being in the context of ongoing multilateral agreements on texts that specifically deal with such rights, and it's without prejudice to the outcome of those negotiations. Basically, it says, it tells us as indigenous peoples that your rights are again put on hold until future negotiations are being worked out within the United Nations framework. I mean, that's outright racist. And that takes away our status and fundamental human rights that are inherent in all peoples. For some reason, here at this conference, in this draft declaration, this does not adhere to us, okay? So we're not being recognized, we're not being respected, we're not being, our status as peoples is not being adhered to.
Finally, Malika Dutt, this latest information of the UN Human Rights Commissioner, Mary Robinson, saying that she got a call from the head of the U.S. delegation at the airport saying the U.S. would keep a single official in Durban who would retain delegate status, and that means that the U.S. wasn't entirely withdrawing. What is that about?
I think it's about political immaturity. Once again, I think that this administration has shown over and over again that most of the time it doesn't really know what it's doing. And in the process, because it is a superpower, it's floundering on foreign policy issues, just ends up making it and its policies look stupid. Right now, the information that we have is that there's one of two individuals, John Blaney, who is the charge d'affaires at the U.S. Consulate in Pretoria, or Craig Huell, who is the consul general for the U.S. Embassy in Durban. It's one of these two people who will assume this so-called delegate status, and they're going to have the ability to get this, phone in amendments to the document. So they're not even going to have to be physically present to be accountable to all of us who are out here or to respond to any questions. They're going to be able to phone in and participate in the document drafting process by telephone. This statement was just made a little while ago, so we haven't had a chance to follow up either with Mary Robinson's office or with anybody from the U.S. delegation as to what the hell they're talking about or what they really mean by this. I personally think that the UN should not allow the US to participate in this fashion. I think that the United Nations, instead of kowtowing once again to this kind of being pushed around, should just put its foot down and say, you know, you're either here like the rest of us or you're not here. It puts all of us as US NGOs in a very peculiar position because on the one hand, the U.S. is withdrawn, and on the other hand, there's this sort of one person here who's not going to be accountable to anybody.
And would it mean the U.S. would sign on to the final document?
Well, I think what they're doing is basically reserving the right to do whatever they want. And so we have no idea what this implies as far as their token representation or their final signing on to the document means. We're hopefully going to have more information in a couple of hours, and we'll try and fill you in tomorrow. But like I said, we just found this out less than an hour ago, so we're still trying to sort out the details. But what I just want to add over here is that I think that what this whole process has shown us over and over again is that human rights issues are just as relevant in the United States as they are globally, and that as U.S. NGOs and as our government behaves, we really have to be responsible and take and hold them accountable for U.S. human rights violations domestically and globally. And their immaturity around the international process makes it even more important for us as U.S. NGOs to understand our role in a globalized international human rights context.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us. We've been speaking with Malika Dutt, who is a member of the U.S. NGO Coordinating Committee for the World Conference Against Racism, and Tom Goldtooth, Executive Director of the Indigenous Environmental Network at the conference on behalf of the International Indian Treaty Council, originally from Bemidji and the headwaters of the Mississippi in northern Minnesota. And you are listening to Democracy Now! When we come back from our break, we'll hear the voices of protest as the U.S. pulled out last night on the streets of Durban, South Africa. We're live at the World Conference. Stay with us.
Fighting to keep this place of love. Yes, we've been fighting, fighting so hard, fighting to keep this place alone. This life is going on, and it's up to you and me. What we gonna do?
You are listening to Democracy Now! In Exile, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. The announcement that the U.S. would withdraw from the UN World Conference Against Racism in Durban, South Africa, caused a furor among both U.S. activists at the conference and among other nations' delegations. U.S. NGO leaders organized a spontaneous march to the steps of the International Convention Center and held a press conference there. Police met the protesters and barred them from entering the building for which they had official credentials. This is the sounds of what happened outside in Durban, South Africa, once news came out that the U.S. had withdrawn.
The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated.
All over the world,
stop U.S. racism! All over the world! Stop U.S. racism! All over the world! Stop U.S. racism! All over the world! Stop U.S. racism! All over the world!
The U.S. government refused to meet with them because the meeting was there. We felt it was very important for everybody to know how the U.S. NGOs feel about this. And so we're marching so that the other people, the other delegations, understand that the U.S. NGOs don't support the U.S. Government position.
Reparation!
want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Reparations!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Reparations!
When do we want it?
Now!
Now they won't even let it fit with our passes!
Now!
They won't even let it fit with our passes now!
They won't let us in!
They won't let us in, even with the passes!
No peace!
No peace!
Is that we have been locked out of a conference that we are all bearing credentials for.
Right.
We've been locked out, and we believe that that lockout is the result of collaboration with the U.S. government. Other people of the world need to know that and need to know why we're out here. We're out here in support of our struggle for reparations. We're out here in support of the Dalit community, the Palestinian community, and the world's people who suffer from domination, bankrolled by the United States government.
We're out here for the transatlantic slave trade being declared crimes against humanity. We're out here to declare the economic basis for racism. We're out here to declare reparations now.
Reparations now. Reparations now.
Reparations now. Reparations now. Reparations now.
Listen up.
It's important for people to understand that now it's clear that the American government doesn't represent the majority of this population.
That's
that
right.
People of color, it's not represented because the government has abandoned their own people.
That's
because
right.
They don't want to represent our position.
That's right.
In the world body where the majority of people of color in America have decided they want reparation. They consider slavery and colonialism as crime against humanity.
That's right.
But the government of the United States have abandoned their people once again.
Once again.
So now,
once again,
we are proposing that those countries, those people, these movements, these NGOs that stand firm for equality, against racism, against discrimination, show their support for African American, indigenous people, people of color, now that we confront the most hostile and terror government in the world.
Yes.
You need to come out and make statements to support us. We want the media to hear from every group that is here that we condemn the Bush administration. We need to hear you.
What time?
Tomorrow.
But sir, tomorrow you can announce it.
Who are you, sir?
Hi. Okay. Oh, you mean?
Who are you?
My name is Humberto Brown. I'm part of the African and African Descendant Caucus. I'm part of the Black Radical Congress. I'm part of the global Afro-Latino who reside in the U.S. who
all
get
right.
mistreated. And we are here representing all our people.
All right. Okay, Gail.
My name is Gail Zepeda. I'm a Pomo from Northern California. I'm part of the Indigenous Peoples Caucus. We were the first ones to hear that the United States was going to walk out of this world conference. When we began this conference at the NGO King's Med Stadium, I asked the question, where is the United States? They responded by sending a very low-level delegation to this conference and no sooner unpacked their bags, if they did that, but to turn around and to walk out on the people that you see gathered here. We are from the United States. There are serious issues in regards to indigenous peoples and the document that is being drafted in those halls. We have brought those issues up and were told point blank by the State Department representatives that they cannot help us. Right now, we feel that as indigenous people that the document, the work that is being happening in this United Nations forum is racist against indigenous people. They are using language that is requiring us and hindering our self-determination and excluding us as something other than human beings. And we think and we look to our brothers and sisters in the United States. When we talk about reparations for not only African Americans, but we talk about it for indigenous people as well. And we want to show solidarity here, because there is racism is alive and well in the United States, and our government has turned our back on us here in South Africa, and we have much work ahead to do in the United States.
My name is Reverend Aaron Laria, and I'm from Barbados. I'm the head of the Barbados NGO Committee for the World Conference. My committee deplore the decision of the American government to pull from this very important conference at a time when they should be leading the world in trying to resolve this hostile discrimination across the nations of the world. We feel that it is time that the United Nations and all the nations of the world stand firm on the principle of racism, on the principle of the slave trade as a crime against humanity, yes, on the principle of reparation. It is deplorable that the United States of a government have taken this decision to pull from this conference. We ask all the other nations who are here to condemn the United States of America for their decision in this important conference.
They're very weak. All right,
this sister's next. Tell your name and where you're from.
My name is Ai-Jen Poo. I'm from Third World Within in New York City, and I'm representing the Immigrant Rights Working Group and Third World Within and CAV Organizing Asian Communities. I'm here to say that the U.S. government has never represented the voice of people of color and third world people living in the United States. We are sick and tired of it, and we demand a voice at this conference, at this UN World Conference Against Racism. Third world people in the United States have been struggling, taking to the streets for years, people of color, migrants, refugees, immigrants, and we demand a voice at this table. And we will continue to take to the streets in the United States and here in Durban for as long as it is necessary.
My name is Yumna Shlala. I'm here representing the Arab and Arab American community that is alive and thriving in the United States. Our issues have been completely negated and diverted in this conference. The United States needs to be held accountable for its funding the genocide of the Palestinian people through Israeli aggression, as well as funding the genocide of the Iraqi people and the racist policies that are played out in both foreign and domestic policy. I call out on all people of color living in the U.S. to stand in solidarity with the Arabs, the Palestinian people, the African Americans, the indigenous peoples, the Latinos, the Asian American communities, that we stand together against the racism in foreign and domestic policies led by the U.S.
Stop U.S. racism! Stop U.S. racism! Stop U.S. racism!
Okay, go ahead.
Make it quick.
I'm being quick.
1 minute.
Hi, everybody. My name is Eric Mann. I'm with the Labor Community Strategy Center and the Bus Riders Union in Los Angeles. As part of this delegation, I'm speaking as a Jew in solidarity with the people of Palestine. It's very upsetting to me, who is fought against anti-Semitism my whole life and got involved in the Black Liberation Movement because of the anti-Semitism that I experienced, to watch the United States and Israel manipulate the issue and claim that the Palestinians are the aggressors and they are the victims. The reality is that the United States is the dominant military power in the world, and Israel, unfortunately, is the dominant military aggressive power in the Middle East. The Palestinian people do not have a homeland. They deserve their homeland. As we speak, Palestinian leaders are being assassinated by the Israeli government with the complete support of the United States. And don't think that this policy will not be directed against Fidel Castro, if we don't stop it, directed against Black leaders in the United States. So my point is as follows. If the United States and Israel want to leave this conference because they're for racism, then let them leave. But don't let them claim that they're the victims. They're the aggressors.
Okay. All right, listen up. My name is Jeribu Hill, and I'm a human rights attorney from Mississippi in the United States. And we just want to make it clear that we will be back tomorrow morning at 9. We will be back again and again because we will not accept. We will not be locked out. We will not accept the United States putting our issues on hold when we've been on hold, some of us who are descendants of their diabolical system of slavery. We have been on hold for 400 years, and we will not accept the lockout. We will be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. We will be back tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Delegates from around the world, NGO leaders, organizing a spontaneous march on the steps of the International Convention Center in Durban, South Africa last night after learning that the United States had pulled out of the UN World Conference Against Racism. When we come back from our break, we'll hear the response of the Reverend Jesse Jackson and then Nobel Peace Prize winner Rigoberta Menchú here on Democracy Now! in Exile. Stay with us. Fear of a black planet, public enemy, here on Democracy Now! in Exile. I'm Amy Goodman, Free Speech Radio. The Reverend Jesse Jackson is attending the World Conference Against Racism in Durban, South Africa, as a member of the Black Leadership Forum. He expressed disappointment yesterday that President Bush has allowed the debate over referring to Israeli practices and Zionism to determine whether the U.S. would participate. His views are shared by a number of members of the Congressional Black Caucus, and he spoke last night.
The U.S. sent a delegation, a low-level delegation, late. They never assumed a seat and departed in a high-profile manner. Our delegation was minimal, and so was our contribution. We put up $250,000 for this conference. But for the women's conference in Beijing, we put up $12 million. And there was a substantial investment here in the first place. Mr. Power's statement read that, based upon one issue with which there's vehement disagreement, the labeling of Israel, that we pulled away. I worked diligently the last 3 days to make the case that we should not label one country or discount others. We should raise the chin bar of human rights real high on the matters of racism, xenophobia, and not let a country or a conflict divert our attention from the global agenda on racism. Think about genocide of 1 million people in Rwanda, slavery in Mauritania, in the Sudan, emerging racism in Brazil, the aborigines in Australia, the impact of the transatlantic trade on our own society. The reasoning today I found to be astounding, where it was that because of a flaw, by the way, the document is not complete yet. The document is not complete yet. But in our own document, speaking of flawed documents, our own document had in it that African descendants would be 3/5 of a human being. That was the final document for 200 years. In fact, it was that document that legalized the transatlantic slave trade, which gives rise to the reparations debate. We went from a 3/5 human document, the one that required a civil war and the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to salvage us. And then another 100 years of legal apartheid. And so we still are having aftershocks from the flaws in our documents. The good news, the reason I urge Secretary Powell to be here, America, through all of our flaws, have a story to tell that we have not told. The last 40 years, we have made racism illegal. We've made sexism illegal. So because of the 54 Supreme Court decision, where you acknowledge a flaw and you correct it legally, the 64 Public Accommodations Bill, the right to vote today, because of Title VII and Title IX, racism and sexism are illegal. We have an affirmative action plan out of which Colin Powell emerged. And so we missed a great opportunity to be a global leader. I went out to a village that they call Bamlaha. People living, sleeping on dirt, raising chickens in their one-room hut. Outdoor toilets and no running water. Other poverty. This is a great moment for us to be here to address global poverty. Drinkable water. 100 million will have AIDS in 5 years. The need for debt relief. The need to at least entertain John Conyers' bill to study the impact of slavery and its impact upon our own society. And so we missed a great moment to lead. You cannot lead from the rear. You cannot assume a position that in global politics, my way or the highway. I see a consistent pattern here, lastly, of disengagement. In Europe, we lost our position on the human rights seat on the UN because of the Kyoto Treaty, ABM, and capital punishment. We disengaged from that process. In the Middle East, as Palestinians and Israelis kill each other, we're disengaged. Only Mr. Bush can call Sharon and Arafat tonight and get a return call and revive the Middle East peace process. We're disengaged from that. Here the world comes from racism. We came late and left early. We're disengaged. A foreign policy of disengagement is not the stuff of which leadership for world peace is made.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson speaking last night after the United States withdrew from the UN World Conference Against Racism in Durban, South Africa, where he was. We now turn to Rigoberta Menchu, also there, the Mayan Quechan Indian from Guatemala, who's been active in the Farm Workers' Rights Movement Committee of the Peasant Union since 1979. In 1980, Rigoberta Menchu's father, also an activist, was killed when Guatemalan military, supported by the U.S. in Guatemala City, stormed the Spanish embassy where he and some other peasants were staying. Shortly afterwards, her mother died after having been arrested, tortured, and raped. In 1981, Menchu had to go into hiding in Guatemala and then flee to Mexico. In 92, she won the Nobel Peace Prize for her work as an organizer of resistance to the Guatemalan military and the struggle for Indian peasant people's rights. Menchu is also in Durban for the World Conference.
Yo soy Rigoberta Menchu.
She's Rigoberta Menchu.
Soy Premio Nobel de la Paz.
She's a Peace Nobel Prize.
Soy embajadora de buena voluntad de UNESCO para la cultura de paz.
She's a goodwill ambassador from UNESCO.
Y soy Maya Quiché de Guatemala.
And she's a Mayan from Guatemala.
Yo he estado en esta conferencia apoyando más de 8 conferencias regionales para discutir los acuerdos de esta conferencia.
I have been a participant in 8 previous meetings to support the agreements of this conference.
Y me doy cuenta que todos los planteamientos que acordamos en las distintas regiones se quedó fuera de esta conferencia.
And now I realize that all agreements that we have reached in 8 previous meetings have been excluded.
Y uno de los temas más graves es el artículo 26 y 27 de la propuesta de declaración que es racista en contra de los pueblos indígenas.
And the most serious offense is that article 27 and 26 are racist.
Es en relación a los pueblos indígenas.
They are related to indigenous peoples.
donde niega totalmente los derechos de los pueblos indígenas.
Basically, these articles deny the rights of the indigenous peoples.
Es un retroceso en relación a todos los avances que hemos tenido en los últimos 20 años.
We're going backwards instead of making progress.
Así que yo me retiraré de esta conferencia el día de mañana.
I'm leaving from this conference effective tomorrow.
No, los pueblos indígenas no están teniendo voz.
The indigenous people have no voice in this conference.
No están dispuestos los gobiernos a aceptar nuestras propuestas.
The governments have refused to hear our demands.
Y creo que esta conferencia no tiene valor, no tiene la credibilidad para abordar los temas de los pueblos indígenas.
This conference don't have the value and the credibility to treat the indigenous people's issues.
Así que soy parte de toda la lucha de los hermanos indígenas, los hermanos afrodescendientes y las mujeres que estamos aquí.
I am part of the struggles of the indigenous peoples, of the African American peoples, and the women, and we are here struggling.
Y los millones de gente que confiaron en nosotros.
And millions of people that trust on us.
Pero que no fueron tomados en cuenta aquí.
But that were not taken into account in this conference.
Yo creo que no es grave que Estados Unidos se retira porque siempre dijo que no participaría.
I don't think that it's serious that the United States decided to quit because they have not been participants.
Y yo pensaba que no participaban.
And I thought that they were not even participating until we heard that they decided to quit.
Así que aquí creo que la politización de los Estados Unidos, los países colonialistas, es muy fuerte en esta conferencia.
So we now realize that the power of the colonial powers is very strong and is influencing this conference.
Y no quieren reconocer ninguna reparación de los daños que causan a los pueblos.
They don't want to recognize any type of reparation to the people that have been affected by the colonizers.
Así que bueno, a la delegación norteamericana le deseo buen viaje.
Well, to the United States delegation, we wish them have a good trip.
Rigoberta Menchú, Nobel Peace Prize woman, winner, Mayan Quechan Indian from Guatemala, speaking in Durban, South Africa, after the U.S. delegation pulled out. Now it looks like they've pulled out all but one person who has been designated as a delegate who will give input from the United States into the final declaration, apparently by telephone. Well, questions about whether Israel should be condemned for its treatment of Palestinians and whether the West should pay reparations for slavery and colonialism have roiled conference preparations for months. Washington has said repeatedly it would not consider language that criticized Israel or legitimized reparations for descendants of slaves. Tomorrow, we'll talk more about the issue of reparations. But now we go to Aliantine, who is with the African NGO Caucus to the Conference on Racism. He traveled to Durban from Dakar, Senegal.
We are claiming for reparations for three issues, slavery, slave trade, and colonialism. And we are claiming the recognition of these crimes as a crime against humanity because the roots of this tragedy was theories of racial supremacy and the fact that the African were not considered as human being or less than human being. And we need reparations for that. And the second thing for us is that there is a great impact of these theories. There is on the level of psychological level, economical level, cultural level, and all these kind of levels. And we need reparations because in the field of Africa, many of the young peoples were taken for slavery, and many of the wealth of Africa were taken, and many powerful countries has built their wealthy on the wealth of Africa during colonialism and during slave trade. And now he is continuing with what we say globalization, because the victim of these past crimes and the victim of the present are the same. So in the African vision, we need firstly that they consider it as crime against humanity. We need apology. We need remembering. It's very important, and truth about this tragedy is very, very important. We need the cancellation of the debt. It is very, very important for us. And we need that education, health, policies must be taken in charge. We need mechanism, very strong mechanism and legal mechanism to combat racism everywhere. You know, we are living it as migrant workers in Europe, as refugees, and as asylum seekers. We have these problems as African in the country. And we need the end of the black racism all over the world. Because when you arrive in the airport in Europe, by the skin, immediately you are segregated. It is very important. When you are going to seek for home, when you are going to seek for home, for work, even you have some skills, your job is only to guard or to some manual work. In Europe, it is very often. In our perspective of African, we need that the end of this kind of practice. The other practice is the impunity of racism acts, racism humiliation, environmental racism you are living. The fact that many African Europeans that have their status in France and in other are excluded from major, for instance. You have never seen in Europe, you have many, many Europeans, one African or Arab making the information at the TV, for instance. It is very, very important. And we see that the problem is because there is discrimination about this field.
Aliantine, the African NGO caucus representative to the UN World Conference on Racism. He traveled to Durban from Dakar, Senegal. And that does it for today's program. If you'd like to email us, you can write to mail@democracynow.org. That's mail@democracynow.org. Democracy Now in Exile is produced by Chris Abrams and Brad Simpson. Anthony Sloan is our music maestro and engineer. Errol Maitland, our technical director. Special thanks to Miranda Kennedy and Chase Pearson. And thank you to the Pacifica stations, especially KPFA, Pacifica's first station, and Roy at KPFK. Mike Black at WEOS in Geneva, New York, and of course, all of our affiliate stations around the country. We are Pacifica. We're broadcasting from Downtown Community Television, that's DCTV, in the historic firehouse of Engine 31 in Chinatown. In the midst of a firestorm, what better place to be? In exile from the embattled studios of WBAI, the studios of the band and the fired, the studios of our listeners. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Democracy Now in Exile.
White man, black woman. Check it out. I've been wondering why people living in fear. My state of mind.
I got faith.
I'm not the one that's running, but they got me on the run. Treat me like I have a gun. All I got is jeans and chromosomes. Consider me black to the bone. All I want is peace and love on this planet. Ain't how that God planned it.